So this is our first day of this five-day retreat here in Southern Dharma, with the title, Composting Fear into Fearlessness, Healing and Transforming the Separate Self Through the Practice of Non-Fear. So let me say from the beginning, as we said last night, if most of you who are here because you have some relationship with afflictive emotions, especially the afflictive emotion of fear, worry, anxiety, panic, disquiet, all the variations of fear, 5 days is plenty of time, is more than enough time. For everyone here to do a significant step forward in terms of the healing and transformation of that, for want of a better word, that diseased part of ourself. Explain probably that a little later. We have to understand that in Buddhism there is a model of what it means to be a healthy human being. There are words like arhats, bodhisattvas, buddhas, right? These are not extraordinary beings that fly around in astral realms that we access only through prayer and devotion. They are simply human beings just like us who have awakened to the truth of reality, the truth of how things really are. They've awakened to their own Buddha mind, as well as they have done the work on healing that which appears to be a separate self, so it manifests in full accordance with the truth of how things are. It is for that reason that I can say to you, 5 days is plenty of time. I know that may sound a little grandiose, especially since I am sure many people in here have... Hey, why don't you try to maybe move a little bit so you don't hurt your neck? Try now. You know, you can just, or maybe come to that one next to you. Yeah, so I'm sort of looking like this, concerned. Again, that may seem a little grandiose or unbelievable or fantastic to people, many people in here who have dealt with their anxiety for much of their life, who've tried various kinds of modalities and read things, and still are still struggling. Again, I'm not saying that anxiety, fear, these things will disappear from your consciousness, but they will no longer be significant if you pay close attention over these next 4 or 5 days and if you practice what is going to be shared with you. So, and let me just say, my voice tends to get soft. Actually, we forgot the microphone. It is being FedExed up here. So it is coming. But if you find, if anybody finds it hard to hear, so in other words, there will be a speaker. But if anybody finds it hard to hear, please kind of signal me, and I'll do my best to keep my voice up. So again, even though, we have a very specific task in front of us, which is to deal with our fears and learn how to compost fears and learn how to live a life where fear is not a predominant part of our psychological makeup and the way we relate to people and situations. I am not going to deal with fear today at all. Now, that may be a big, great disappointment to many of you. Because there's one thing that we like as Americans, right? We like the technique. Give me the technique, let me work on it, and everything will be all right. But the only reason you're here today is because you have maybe tried the techniques. You've read the books. And still, afflictive emotions, of which we are focusing on anxiety and fear, primarily in this one, but it is one of many, still plagues you. We have to understand that in Buddhism, it is not the technology which is most important. It is the view that is most important. When you get the right view, then the technology will work. And by the way, that's diabetic feedback. So that will be going off, and that's fine. It'll be a bell of mindfulness. Whenever you hear that, so thank you, Anna, for bringing that with you. Whenever you hear that little beep beep, just check to make sure that you are present so that people help us. So again, it is the way we look at life, the way we view life, the way we relate to life, the way we relate and view the comings and goings and the ups and downs of life, which is the basis for the arousal of our afflictive emotions. When we have wrong view, we have affliction. When we have right view, we don't have affliction. When we have wrong view, we have suffering. When we have right view, we have the cessation of suffering. This is not my own words, these are the words of the Buddha. And these are the words of the experience of millions of practitioners for 2,600 years. We are at the end of a long line of practice. So therefore, it is most important that we change our view, we change the context, we change the way we frame our experience of reality. When you do that, then the experiences that go on within reality, so-called reality, are very different, appear very different, and you relate to them very differently when you have a different view. Is that clear? So, the reason many of us continue to struggle with our afflictions is we are continually bringing in new technology and new teachings, but we're grafting it on to a body that is inherently flawed. Is that clear? This is important. I mean, this is basics, but this is the most important. We need to develop a new context for the way we look at life and live life. Right? And then you will find many of the things that afflict you, bother you, that cause you all kinds of sufferings or difficulty, in and of themselves do not occur. As well as the technology of Buddhism, which is a technology that is primarily deals with the mind, taming the mind, training the mind, healing, transforming the mind, even though there is a context of things, how we are with our body, and the actions we do with our body, the actions we do with our speech. It is primarily because the actions of our body and the actions of our speech all are based on our mind. It is the technology of meditation, of mindfulness, concentration, and insight, which really gives us the means to really, at a deep level, change the context of our life. Okay? So Buddhism is not a coping strategy. Buddhism is not a self-improvement strategy. These days, it is used that way. And it can be used that way, but that is not, and never was, the teaching of Buddha or the teaching of the masters. The Buddha said, I teach one thing, the cessation of suffering. He didn't say, I teach one thing, helping people learn to cope with the difficulties of life. He didn't say, I am teaching ways that people can improve their life a little bit, so they're a little happier. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. But that's not his teaching. His teaching is the cessation of suffering, which is nirvana, the absence of dukkha, the absence of suffering. Is that clear? This is important. I want to say it right from the beginning. So, we are going to take time today to kind of look at the big picture, as well as in the practices of the day, to cultivate the generic practices of mindfulness and concentration, which are necessary. If any type of insight is going to occur within our mind that is going to hold. Again, many of us along the way of our spiritual, psychological paths, we have insights, don't we? We have personal insights, we read something that gives us an insight. We're in therapy and we have insights. We have all kinds of insights along the way. Why don't they stick? Why don't they stick? Again, because they are being grafted on to something that is not whole or healthy. So, is that clear? I don't want to make sure this is going to be a different kind of retreat. I mean, a lot of my retreats are really just meditative, but this retreat will be meditative, of course. But it has that focus on fear and afflictive emotions. And so we're going to, I want to do this journey together with you. It's a process we're all going to participate in together. So when I ask for feedback, if you're not with the program, or if you're with some other program that you think is better, please raise your hand. Okay, I'm really open to everything. This is not dogma, for those of you who don't know me. I'm not teaching dogma. So let me talk first about meditation. And then we'll talk about view. Okay? First thing I'd like you to do today is to relax. Okay? Just relax. Now, many people think relax. Oh, I can stretch out, turn on the TV, get some junk food. That's many people's idea of relaxation. Okay? I'm not talking about that kind of relaxation. I'm talking about a relaxation of the mind. Many people these days, yoga, all these other things, they know how to practice physical relaxation. But that's not the most important relaxation. It's certainly beneficial in many ways. The most important relaxation is to be able to relax your mind. Relax your mind means you are at ease. Nothing's bothering you. Right? Let me say that again. You're at ease. Nothing's bothering you. Many people think daily life is all about a series of things that bother me. Right? Things I got to be concerned about, worried about, resentful about, angry about, sad about. That's not what life's about. So please, up here, 5 days. When you go back home, you can be as miserable as you want. Okay, you can take up all your old fears and angers and resentments and just milk them. If you haven't milked them already, if there's more energy in them, you can continue on. But please, remember I said last night, just be here. What do you notice about being here? There's nothing going on, is there? Right? We get up, go to the meditation hall, follow the bells, we walk around, we sit, we go eat. I mean, the biggest deal is what? Raining. You know, did I bring my umbrella? I mean, that's the biggest deal here. Am I missing something? So please be aware. That's why it's so wonderful to do retreat in a natural environment, because it's very clear there's nothing going on. Everything else is at peace. Everything's at peace here, isn't it? The environment is peaceful. The environment is issue-free. Problem-free. So if you have issues, if you have problems, there's only one person who's generating them, and that's you. They're not real. Okay? So knowing that and using this environment to notice the natural ease of the world, the natural world, please relax. Right? Cultivate a relaxed mind, a mind at ease, a mind that's not tight, not holding on to anything, not overly concerned about anything. Is that clear? Does everybody know how to do that? Just relax. Relax, man. Everything's okay. Okay? Everything's okay. Whatever's going on with your children or anybody else in the world, you have no way of knowing, do you, what's going on. What a gift. You can relax. Everything's fine. In this moment, everything's fine. Is that true? The world may be coming to an end. Who knows what those people out there are doing? Human beings, they're up to mischief all the time. But right now, we have the capacity, in this moment, of just being here, present, relax, aware, right? And we can even enjoy ourselves. Now, in Buddhist meditation, and that's what I want us to practice today, the basis of Buddhist meditation is mindfulness and concentration. The third one is insight, but that is based on the first two. Again, to do our work on our minds, on our emotions, on our physical sensations, that are, and our memories and imaginations that are connected to the arousal of fear within us, the more that our minds are clear, the more that our minds are present, and the more that we have some capacity to concentrate, to pay attention to what's going on, the more felicitous, the more consistent will be our capacity to work on our stuff. Is that clear? Because one of the things we have here for 5 days is we have the capacity to work very single-mindedly on our stuff. Our stuff being the stuff in our mind, by the way, which has no inherent reality, just in case you're interested.
Say that again.
What I said was the stuff of our mind has no inherent reality. Wakes up, hits the bell.
You woke me up, Rest.
Good to have you back with us, Joe. Again, relaxation, a relaxed mind, a mindful mind. Everybody knows about mindfulness these days, this capacity to be present and also to be attentive. There's kind of a global mindfulness and there's an attentive mindfulness. A mindfulness that can focus on something, that can attend to something. Whether it's a physical thing, or walking, or sitting, or eating, or whether it's a thought, or feeling, or perception, mindfulness is present and it is attentive. It knows what's going on. Right? So it knows when we're focused and when we're not focused. When we're where we're supposed to be and when we're not supposed to be. That's all within the capacity of mindfulness. It has this wonderful capacity of remembering. Right? Oh, I'm not supposed to be just daydreaming. I'm supposed to be focusing. Right? Why is that? It's because of mindfulness, that you're even aware of it. So it's a wonderful capacity that is a natural capacity of our mind, but it has to be developed so it can become stronger. For those of you who want to cultivate mindfulness and concentration, please understand it will not happen overnight. It will not happen over two nights, or three nights, or five nights. It is a process. It is a process that hopefully over time you get better at. I often say to people that for lay people like us, don't think of concentration, single point of concentration and focus, as kind of a laser-like, single-pointed. That is a very difficult stage to develop, and to develop outside of a long retreat. These were capacities of the mind that were developed by people primarily in retreat. Some people do have that natural ability, but I describe it more as sort of like you're a shepherd, with your herd of sheep. You want them all going in the same direction. Right? The herd is going in the same direction, and when one goes off this way or one goes off that way, you bring them back. So the herd keeps moving in the direction you want. If they're running off this way and that way and that way and that way, that's not a good shepherding, is it? Fire that shepherd. You want them all moving in the same direction, and basically you would like to have that much influence on your mind that it generally moves in the direction you want. So mindfulness, concentration in Buddhism, samatha, is a word that means calm abiding. Mindfulness and concentration help the mind dwell, abide in calmness. Right? The waters are calm. They're not like this, not full of waves. The waters are calm. Right? When the waters are calm, you can see into the water. You can see what's in there. If it's really calm and clear, you can see down to the bottom. That's insight. That's what we want to do. But if our minds are just all stirred up, full of muck, constantly roiling about, you can look from now to the end of time. You'll never see anything, will you? You'll see just bits and pieces. It'll be gone. So that's why it is important that we calm, relax, calm, clarify the mind. Okay. So when we do our work, beginning tomorrow. And again, to say we do our work tomorrow and this is like not the work. No, this is the work. Tomorrow we use what we're developing today to look at anxiety and fear, but you can use these same attributes to deal with anything. They're the basis of Buddhist meditation. And so what I've asked the... what I've asked the people doing the guided meditations is to really focus today on going through the basic awarenesses, the basic mindfulnesses that were originally taught by the Buddha in the Anapanasati Sutra, which is mindfulness of the body and breath, the mindfulness of sensations, and for today, mindfulness of the mind, thoughts, feelings, perceptions. Okay? These are the arenas in which fear arises. Right? Fear arises in the body as sensations. Fear arises in the mind as emotions. And fear arises in the mind as thoughts and perceptions. So we want to first develop this capacity to see this, be present to this. Okay? So today, as we do it, we're doing this very important work. Any questions about that? So again, instruction will be given. But that's kind of our theme for today. Mindfulness, awareness of the body breath, physical sensations, the mind, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, emotions, memories, I mean, those are all occurring in the mind. Again, let me just say that a characteristic of real mindfulness is an objectivity. An objectivity which is allows us to be equanimous. What is that? That means is that as we observe, as we are mindful of our thoughts, feelings, perceptions, our sensations within our body, we are simply mindful of. We are not judging. Good, bad. Wanted, unwanted. Like, don't like. Which again, for many people, is a whole new experience. Because we, right? Does anybody really love to be afraid? Anybody really just love the feeling of fear? Nothing makes them happier than a good panic attack. Right? No. Okay? But we need to develop a capacity to be aware that these emotions or these sensations have arisen in our body and mind, and just noting them, just aware of them, mindful of them, without doing anything. Okay, we'll be working on that over days, but I just want to say that's... So as you practice mindfulness today, learn just to be present to what's going on in you and around you, without judging it, without evaluating, without entering into an internal dialogue about it. Oh, my body's feeling this. This part of my body is relaxed, at ease. This part of my body is a little uncomfortable. That's all. This part of my body may be very uncomfortable. That's okay. Just aware. Same way with emotions, same way with thoughts. Whatever your mind is, it is. You can't get a new mind. This mind you are experiencing right now, and you'll be experiencing over the next 5 days, is your very own mind. You have worked diligently since your birth. Well, maybe a little later on, probably a little break there for a year or two. Developing this mind the way it is today. You know, the process of Buddhism, the Dharma, is the process of the transformation of that mind. So it really serves you. So any question about, again, to be more specific, guided meditation, but just generally, this will be the practices, meditative practices that we will do today. Solitary practice at other times. Good. Big picture. Okay, Dharma is big picture. Fear is small picture. Fear is very tiny. There's some little thing or big thing that I'm afraid of, right? Very specific. Dharma is big picture. Like, what's this all about? You know, like the whole thing. Like, what's it all about? Feelings, perceptions, people. This world, what are people up to? Right? What are they up to? Right? They say they want to be happy, but they do all these things to make themselves unhappy. They say they want a peaceful world, and yet they can't stop killing each other or harming each other. They say, everybody should love each other, do unto other. They say all these things, and yet all over the world, doesn't matter what their culture, religion, people, or non-religion, people treat themselves and each other so miserably often. Right? So what's going on here? To be a spiritual person is to ask big questions. These are not the kind of questions that will kind of get you a lot of people coming over to you at cocktail parties. Okay? These are not those kind of questions. Okay? Just want to make that clear. Not everybody, actually, most people don't ask those kind of questions, do they? They don't ask those big questions about life and the purpose and the meaning of life. And if you bring it up, they kind of go, whoa, let's change the subject quickly. Right? What did you see on TV last night? That's what they want to know. Who won what game? But Buddhism begins with a man who asked some big questions, right? And he looked for answers. So that's important that we understand that asking big questions and seeing the big picture is what this is about fundamentally. So, big picture. So, picture in Buddhism. One of the first big picture things is this word impermanence. Now again, is there anybody who's never heard in their life the word impermanence? Is there anybody in this room who's heard the word impermanence? Is there anybody in this room who maybe reflected on or contemplated or read books about impermanence, sickness, old age, and death, change? Everybody. And yet what? And yet we still don't get it. Because when you get it, all the suffering that comes from impermanence ceases. So, again, going back to the Buddha, we know, seeing a sick person, an old person, a dying person, this is what, so to speak, freaked him out. Remember? This is what freaked him out back there in India, a long time ago. Because he thought, what? Life's a blast. Right? Wow, life's a blast. Got everything you want. Healthy, got a nice wife, just had a kid, I'm the prince, Life is good. So he was happy. But when he saw sickness, old age, and death, that is impermanence, that, as opposed to the rest of us that kind of are in denial or look away or rationalize, he was a deep thinker. Right? He said, wow, what does this all mean? That means that my healthy body is going to get sick, yuck, is going to age, double yuck, and is one day going to die. It's just going to go. And that means that all the people, all the things that I do are all going to go away. They have no meaning. You know what I'm saying? So that's what kind of really got to him. So it's important that we not just read sickness, old age, and death, the five remembrances, this kind of stuff, as if they're just like catechism or something that we just repeat. We say, oh yeah, impermanence. But that we really get it. Oh, this is the way things are. Okay? Everything is impermanent. Everything is changing. Nothing is stable. Right? And if there's one thing as human beings that is most important to us is what? I'm impermanent, right? It's like people go, oh, I understand sickness, old age, and death, until it happens to them or their loved ones. And they go, then they're what? Upset. Freaked out. I can't believe this has happened. I can't believe this person got sick. I can't believe this person, by the way, just here, and now they died. You know, I can't believe all this, you know. I can't believe this one lost a job. I can't believe, you know, there are fires in California. I can't believe this, you know. Right? Oh, I thought we believe in impermanence and change. And that everything, you know, is in a state of flux. You see, if you really reflect deeply on impermanence, you look in the world of change and you understand it. You understand the changes, the big stuff, sickness, old age, and death, which are just part of life, but you understand that everything is changing. Our minds are changing. Our thoughts are changing. Our emotions are changing. The people in our life are changing. Everything, every day, is different. Right? That's called the news. Right? When you pick up the newspaper next time and you read the news or you listen to the... I don't think people pick up the newspaper anymore, do they? I've dated myself. The news is just reporting what? Change. You know, what change, you know. And nowadays you can check in every 5 minutes and find something's changing. What's changed? Yeah. Oh, I thought this was the headline at 9 o'clock this morning. 11 o'clock is a different headline. What happened to that first headline? Impermanent. Change. People are changing. Situations. They treat you one way one day, and they treat you another way another day. Next day they treat you another way. Right? Change. You're on top of the world. You're down in the bottom of the world. They love you, they hate you. They hire you, they fire you. They want to be with you, they don't want to be with you. You like them, you hate them. Right? Is that clear? Today you're healthy, tomorrow you're sick. Today your body's at ease, tomorrow it's in pain. But even quicker than that. Is that clear? That is all called what? Impermanence. So the contemplation and the reflection, seeing the big picture. You know, people don't see the big picture. Every little change is significant, right? Every change that goes in the direction they want things to go, they think what? They're happy. Life is good. Right? All those things that change, that go in the direction that they don't want to happen, they think is bad, and they get afflictive emotions. Okay. That's all because that up and down, happy, sad, blah, 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 is all because of what? Ignorance of impermanence. Things change. So please reflect on that. Because the understanding, the deep understanding of impermanence is one of the most significant things you can do to cultivating a peaceful, equanimous, happy mind. To live in the world of change and impermanence and not be tossed around by it. Now, this is all very quick, but is that clear? See, that's what I mean by big picture. You see the forest, you see the whole thing. You're not just going tree by tree. Are there any questions? I mean, please. No question means you're half asleep, or no question means, oh, yeah, I'm with you. Which is it?
Oh, yeah.
Or I may fall asleep. Join Ken over here. Sleeping at the tea party. Second big picture. Impermanence in Pali, they call that anicca. For those who know, practice Vipassana, you probably hear anicca ad nauseum. Anicca this and anicca that. The other big one is karma. Karma, these are all Sanskrit words. Karma means what? Cause and effect. Okay? So, all right, Everything's changing. Everything's impermanent. My body, your body, you know, right? So is this just a totally random, chaotic universe? You know what I mean? I'm just tossed around? You know, all I can do is kind of just do my best to hold on? Or is there some kind of operating principles or laws behind all this change? Okay. In Buddhism, as well as Hinduism, I think it's called karma, the law of cause and effect. Right? Very simple. You know, this happens because of that. You know, this will produce that. That produced this. It's just this endless unfolding of causes and conditions. Okay? Big ones, right? Small ones. Very near ones, which means you do something and something immediately happens, right? Carol tripped on her foot, she fell down. Right? Cause and effect, right? A physical thing. But some things are longer term, right? The seeds of causes, you know, maybe years ago, and now finally they're coming to fruition, right? As well as, you know, most things are not simple one-on-one. There are numerous causes, such as us. Right? We are the product of many, 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 many causes and conditions that have happened throughout our lives from birth. Right? That is why we are the way we are, because of causes and conditions. Is that clear? Again, this is not just a concept. This is like, you know, this is like, what's the operating principle of this life? Right? This life of impermanence and change and instability. You can't really, you know, trust anything's going to be permanent or solid. Right? If that's the nature of things, you know, how do I work with it? Oh, cause and effect. I understand. Right? Why is there global warming? Cause and effect, right? Global warming is the effect of causes, you know, multiple causes. Right? You see, but you know, it gives you the why. So you don't have to, you know, roil about again. If you see an effect and you don't know the cause and you want to do something about it, you would look into it, right? What is the cause? You know, what is it that supports this in the world? What is it that supports me in the world? Why do I feel the way I do? Why do I have fear? Why do I have anxiety? Right? All this could be because we don't understand the causes and conditions that have created these things within us. Right? So, cause and effect, and understanding that cause and effect is the operating principle, and learning how to look into, that's in Buddhism, that's called Vipassana, looking into, looking deeply, below the surface, seeing cause and effect is important, not only to be accepting of the way things are, but also to have the wisdom to know about change. Right? Because when you understand, what is your name there?
Amber.
Amber had a problem with her car, right?
Yes.
Right? Symptom, right? You could have thought the thing's going to blow up any minute or something. You know, you could go anywhere, right? But you went today to find out the cause, right? And when you found out your cause, then you could find out what to do about it.
Right? If we found the cause, yes.
What?
If we found the cause.
Right, but eventually you want it. You see what I'm saying? I mean, yes. It's a principle that we use everywhere. Right? When there's a problem, when there's a situation, it didn't just arise out of nowhere. In this world of impermanence, there is this endless unfolding of causes and conditions. That's all that's going on out here. That that understanding is not necessarily a moral or ethical understanding. Right? We're not judging good or bad. This is kind of laboratory kind of, right? This is just the way it is. How it manifests in society and the values is important, but it's something else. Okay? This is just what are the, you know, what's the operating principle of this world of people? Right? You know, we're always going, I can't believe that person is like that. Right? People say that, right? I can't believe that person did that. I can't believe that person said that. I can't believe that person didn't know that. Right? Don't we talk that way? But the truth is what? Of course they don't know better. Right? If they knew better, they wouldn't have done it. Right? And when you say, I can't believe somebody did that or said it, that's the stupidest thing we can say, because they just did it. And now we're going, I can't believe it, which shows you the problem is where? Not with them, but our book that we carry around false beliefs about how the world should be. So when you understand cause and effect, frustration, anger, all these things go. And patience and understanding is what's left. As well as fear, despair, all these things. So the understanding of karma, cause and effect, is not just a song, not just a phrase, not just a little thing to stamp on, oh, just karma, just their karma. No. There are causes that are supporting it. Now, why is that so important for people up here who come for 5 days to heal and transform? Right? Because karma implies, this is so important, karma implies that nothing is fixed, nothing is permanent, nothing is solid, that everything that has arisen, which is you and me, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, the whole deal, relationships, it is all the outcome of past causes and conditions. If you look at your life, if you look at your relationship, if you look at your mind, and you go, mm-mm. I don't like this one, right? Or I don't like how this feels. Oh, well, all I need to do is what? Understand the causes and conditions that are supporting it and make new causes. New causes create what? New effects. So that's the process of change in Dharma. Right? We don't keep working the old causes, hoping that somehow we're going to get new effects. Right? Doesn't work that way. As it is said, apple seeds do not produce oranges. Apple seeds produce apples. Bad causes, bad outcomes. So, this understanding deeply cause and effect and how it operates in the world, but even more importantly, how it operates within us, gives us the capacity of being very understanding and compassionate for the way we are right now. Anybody here can help being who they are right now? Think about it. Right now, you are who you are, right? Whatever you are. That's the way you are, isn't it? Okay, let's say you're sleeping. That's the way you are. Okay. Now, you may turn your mindfulness on that and go, oh, I don't want to be sleeping. Oh, I say you wake yourself up. Right? You've created a new cause, right, which will produce a different effect. So that is the wonderful thing about understanding karma. Means it's all up for grabs. Now, there are certain things, just somebody, in case, you know, like, yeah, if you're a man or a woman, because these days even that is up for grabs in a certain way. But traditionally, you know, the things about our body, and there are all kinds of certain things karmically that are kind of not totally set, but are kind of bigger set. Okay? But really most of, especially in terms of our mind, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, they're all up for grabs. They all have the power to be healed and transformed. The compost, as we'll learn about more tomorrow. Are you asking a question? Oh, okay. Actually, here we, when we have a question, we put our hands like this. So when you're going like that, I thought maybe you just practice. So we talked about impermanence, big picture, karma, anicca, karma, cause and effect. The third is dukkha. Picture. Anybody ever hear the word dukkha? Oh, I like that. Anybody ever heard the word suffering who didn't hear the word dukkha? So now everybody is. So dukkha is the word for, in Sanskrit, Pali, for suffering. But again, we have to understand that in Buddhism, it doesn't really mean suffering the way we understand it. Because in our English, when we think of suffering, we think of what?
Pain.
Something like significant, right? Somebody's really suffering. They're in a lot of pain, emotional pain, physical pain. To us, that's suffering. So in the Buddha's teaching on suffering, that is called like the gross sufferings of life. Right? That all human beings are subject to. Right? Sickness, disease, hurt, violence, you know, all these kinds of things that are obvious, right, are all included in this word dukkha, or suffering. But also interesting enough, all the ups and downs in life, when in Buddhism are called the eight worldly winds, are also called dukkha. Right? Now, the eight worldly winds are things, are things probably that we would think, oh, this is just ordinary life, right? Sometimes we get what we want, sometimes we get what we don't want, right? Some things turn out the way we want, sometimes they don't turn out the way we want. Sometimes, I said earlier, sometimes they love us, sometimes they don't like us. Sometimes we're noticed and everybody says, hi Fred, so good to see you. Other times, they don't even notice you. You're kind of anonymous, right? Sometimes there's pleasure, sometimes there's pain. Sometimes there's success, sometimes there's failure, right? So all those ups and downs of life, right? The ups and downs of ordinary life, which is really what most people's lives are about. Right? The Buddha called that dukkha. He called that suffering. That's meaningless. Endlessly, you're happy when things go your way, you're unhappy when things don't go your way. You're happy when they notice you, you're unhappy when they don't notice you. Right? You're happy when things work out, you're not happy when things don't work out the way you want. Right? You're happy when they treat you the way you want to be treated, and you're unhappy when they treat you the way you don't want to be treated. Right? You think. That is, right there in the eight worldly winds, you see the source of your emotions. Right? But they're all related to this dukkha, this change, right? This impermanence. You can't make everybody love you. You can't always make everything work. Things are never going to unfold always the way you want. That is just the way things are. Because things, cause and effect. So, please understand, the Buddha called that up, that taking your happiness and unhappiness, or based on the ups and downs of worldly life, he called that suffering. Persons, their life, their emotions, their concerns are all about this up and down, which will always be up and down. Okay? Just the way it is. Is that clear? Now, the third suffering, which is often the most difficult for us to ascertain, is the suffering of separateness. That just experiencing yourself as a separate self, an ego, just experiencing yourself encased like a cocoon, separate from other people, separate from nature, separate from everything. Right? The condition of most people. Right? You call that suffering, dukkha. That's suffering. Not knowing who and what you really are. You call that dukkha. So can you see, dukkha is big. And it has many different levels. But to understand, like with karma, like with impermanence, that dukkha, this kind of suffering of all these different levels, is what's going on in the world. That's what's going on in the world, right? And probably it's going on in a lot of our lives. Right? We're always trying to what? Get it right. You know? I can just get everybody to like me, everything to go my way, get lots of pleasure, get lots of success. Right? Then life will be what? Good. Right? And if I can just minimize the pain, minimize the negativity, minimize the failure, minimize the downs, never get anybody to dislike me or leave me, then, right? You see? And that struggle, that endless work to get it right, right? That's life, isn't it? That's what people do, right? The Buddha called that what? Dukkha. He called that suffering. That's a life you'll never win at. It's stacked against you. Because of why? Because of impermanence. Because of cause and effect. Can you see that? So these three, these fundamentals, many people in Buddhism, they go, I got those down, now let's get on to the big stuff. Let's get into non-duality, non-self. It's the big stuff. But the reason that we get the big stuff, or we try to get the big stuff, and it never works, is because of, we don't get this. You think, why is my mind still not at ease? It's because we're still what? I mean, what is roiling you up every day? Anybody want to admit it? What is roiling you up every day? Getting you all bent out of shape. What is it?
Impermanence.
Yeah, we don't, because things are what? It's just the ups and downs in life. We don't like it. And we are so preoccupied with it. I can't believe that person said that. I can't believe this happened. I can't believe that happened. I don't want that to happen. I worry about, it's like, it's all because of what? Ignorance of the way things are. Buddhism calls that ignorance. We have the wrong view. We don't have right view. You have right view, which means you see things clearly in the way that I'm talking. That is very transformative in and of itself. Then when you practice mindfulness, concentration, insight, you have a stable basis for doing the work. But for most of us, we don't have that, so we're always, even when we go to meditate, what are we doing? Ruminating. This one, and that one, and this one, and that one. We're worried about that, and we're right? Why is that? Because that's like what's most important to us. In Buddhism, that's called the world of attachment and aversion. You've heard of that. Anybody ever heard of the world of attachment and aversion? This is it. It's because, we don't see the relationship between this mind that we have to deal with in our meditation and our attachment and aversion that's still so strong. Because of our attachment and aversion, we're always roiled up. Yes?
I'm finding myself overtaken by my curiosity because I don't know what the eight worldly winds are, or I don't think I do.
Yeah, you probably do.
So,
says Buddhism, you know, it takes things that are common sense and gives it numbers. Anybody ever hear the eight worldly winds? Who knows the eight worldly winds? Anybody know? The eight worldly winds are things like what?
Pleasure, pain.
Pleasure, pain. The eight worldly winds are this conceptualization of, you know, if you think of wind blowing through the forest, right? It is the wind that's making the tree, the leaves shimmer. It is, you know, what's making the boughs bend and break? We'd say it's the wind. It's the wind. So what's the wind that's rustling this human life, rustling our minds? You know? So it is pain and pleasure, right? We spend our whole life to get as much pleasure of all types and to diminish pain. Right, so that's one game we're always very busy doing. Right? What's another one?
Gain and loss.
Gain and loss. Anybody like to gain? We all love to gain. Anybody like to lose? No, we don't like to lose. But of course what? Things go up and down. Sometimes we gain, sometimes we lose. That is the nature of things. But if we want one, we don't want the other. So we're always, again, trying to gain, we're either working hard to get the gain, or when we get the gain, we're working very hard, not to lose the gain, right? Working very hard to get the job, the relationship, and then, you know, once we get it, we're working very hard, we have anxiety, we're going to lose it. I mean, it's crazy, what we call that normal life. And the other worldly wins.
Praise and blame.
Praise and blame, all right?
Success.
Yes, so we like, anybody love to be praised? We love it. Right? Hey, notice me. Right? Praise me. Right? Do we like to be blamed? No. We don't like to be. We get angry. Can you believe it? Dare to blame me. Of course, we go around blaming people, but we have good reason, right? We have good reason to blame people. But I think they should blame us, especially if we think they're blaming us unfairly. That really gets to us. So praise and blame.
Fame and disrepute.
Yeah, fame and disrepute, the variation.
Success
and failure. So you think about it, we're always, you know, wanting to be success, not wanting to fail. That's a big anxiety. We get into that. People, you know, oh my God, heaven forbid I should fail. I won't say anything. Right? So these are the worldly winds. There are four that we want, four that we don't want. So we're always, but again, because they are related, you can't want one and not want the opposite. Right? If your whole life's about getting as much pleasure, you are very disturbed when anything is unpleasurable. Right? Can you see that? I mean, one, this is the world of the duality. You can't have one without the other. Right? If all we want to do is succeed, then we're always going to be very upset when we fail. If we always want people to like us, we're going to be very upset when they don't like us. I'm going to be working very hard to what? To get them to like us. You know, there are people like that. I hope nobody here is like that. Who spends an enormous amount of time operating the world to try to get people to like them. Right? Anyway, we won't go into that. So these are the eight worldly ways. These is kind of what's blowing this world. Okay? So impermanent cause and effect suffering. If you get these, you really have some very important keys to what's, you know, okay, every day different, every day situations, but the underlying principles of life. This is a big picture. Is that clear? You get the big picture, and you reflect, and you meditate, so it really seems real to you, and you begin to look at life through this, right? Through this view, this correct view, this right view, you will see dramatic changes occur.
in your happiness, in your well-being, in your emotional stability. A few other big picture things. Well, let me just put this one out there. Sounds kind of silly now that I think about it. No past, no future. How about that for a big picture? Again, these are the kind of things we talk about all the time. Oh, right. So everybody here is very rational, logical. There's nobody here, hopefully, who's having a psychotic episode today. So therefore, grounded in rationality, if I said to you, does the past exist as a real thing? You would say,
no.
No. The past does not exist, does it? Has everybody agreed with that?
I'm not sure.
You don't know? You're not sure if the past is real? Hold on.
Wait.
Let's try this again. What is this, like right now that we're experiencing? What would you call this? Your name is Ben. Ben, what do you call this?
Present.
You call this a present? Or now, right?
This is
the present, right? So, if I said to you, what happened to your experience of 5 minutes ago? Is it here?
It morphed into this.
Well, but it's not here. It's gone. Right? I mean, you're here. You're not there.
But it's now this.
Yeah, it's now this. This is called the present. But anything prior to this in the realm of time is the past. It has already happened. It no longer exists in any real way. Right? I mean, you could, if I said to you, do you remember your best friend in elementary school, you could say what?
Yes.
Yes, you could, but that remembering or those memories are all just going on in your mind. I mean, he's not here, or she's not here, right? In that sense, it's not, they're not real. We're talking about this being real. So everything prior to this moment, even our conversation a minute ago then, where you told me about, that is now past. It's past, it's gone. You could try to remember what we were talking about 2 minutes ago, but that would just be your own mental thinking about it. It's gone. You can have memory, things leave traces, but they're gone. Yes.
It's difficult because then you think, this second, in 1 second, will be the past and it won't be real.
There you go.
So then it
there you go.
The present seems very real.
Well, what's your name?
Carrie.
You're absolutely right. Carrie, you may be onto something. Yeah. Because even this moment, as soon as I say, in even this moment, it's gone. That is the truth. Let's hold it. That's the truth. I mean, let's first just acknowledge that the past is past. That's why it's called the past. It no longer exists in any real way.
But in my mind,
physically.
In your mind. But again, it doesn't exist in any real, solid, permanent way. It just exists as thoughts. I mean, you may have a memory, but if I said, Manfred, can you show me your memory? You'd say, what? Exactly. We can't, you know, it's just your memory. Right? There's 6, 7, 8 billion people out here, and you got your own memory. Now, I hope it's a good one. But it's not real in any, the way I'm saying. It's not real in any solid, permanent, self-existing way. It's gone. And you don't even know if your memory of it is an accurate memory, do you?
No, that's true.
Yeah, so I mean, even yes. Some of the questions.
What did you say? Sorry.
What?
It's just physically not, doesn't exist.
Well, we have to have a definition of what's real. Mm-hmm. Right? Something has a reality. Reality can only be known in the present. Right? I mean, even if you're going to think about the past, you're going to think about the past right now. Right? get a little deeper. This is important. Yes.
Well, I think that sometimes when we do have memories, especially of particularly painful kind of situations, that it is real in that there can be physical sensations that go along with it. So the sensations are there, even though the event is over.
Okay. I will say to you, we're not going to get into it today. I will say to you, Dale, when you go to a movie, let's say you go to a very dramatic movie, might you cry at a sad part?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Might you get angry if somebody does something unjust to somebody else?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Might you get scared if it's kind of a... Okay, so you have... And those are sensations that are going on in your body and your mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're very real when they arise. So if I said to you, but hold on, is that movie... What is that movie? Is that, are those real people? No. So, to say, because I have an emotional response to something, makes it real, I wouldn't buy. Just the same way, you know, you might say, I have a painful memory, but you have a painful memory, but that memory is like a movie. You have an image. And associated with it are feelings and sensations, like when we go to a movie. Anyway, we'll get into this tomorrow. Yes.
I just feel like the past informs the present. You know, you don't expect to continuously talk about the now. You expect us to remember it and keep it in mind in the future things you're saying.
Well, again, you're talking about kind of our minds and how we use things. But again, cause and effect. So your name is?
Manisha.
And so I'd say to you, Manisha, yes, many causes and effects, many, many, many causes and conditions have kind of created you. Right? Okay. Now, where do all those causes and conditions in a real way exist now? They exist right now in you. Okay, right? So all those causes and conditions are present in you right now, aren't they? Now, again, you can say, well, I got this from my mother, I got this from my father, I got this from my third grade teacher, I got this from my college. You know, you can look at all the variables, right, that have contributed to you. But their manifestation is only occurring right now. So that's what that means. It doesn't mean that, like again, when we're dealing with fear, that we may not be looking into our past as a memory to understand things. But I'm just trying to get an agreement that we understand that the past is not real. It's not. Where is it?
I just have the hard concept of, and I agree, but yeah. the concept of past is not physical, or physically here, but the past is mentally here.
I know. What is your name?
Tina.
Tina.
Yeah.
But Tina, that thought about your past, where is it?
Here.
Here. I don't see it.
Okay.
Hold on. I don't see it.
Okay. In my mind, I guess I should say.
Well, if I said to you, and I'm not trying to make you feel uncomfortable, but this is important. If I say to you, Tina, if you look right at that thought right now, what do you see? That thought of the past?
The experience, probably.
Are you having that experience right now? What's really going on when you look into your mind? At that thing that you call a past experience.
Well, I guess it's a memory, right? I remember.
No, I'm not asking you to call it anything. I'm asking you something we never do. See, this is what I'm saying. This is different. Like, what is that thing we call in a memory? That thing we call in a thought? Was it there 5 minutes ago?
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm still here.
Right.
So, I'm still... real to you.
See, I'm real. Right? You can even turn away and you look back, I'll still be here.
Right.
Okay? But when you look into the thoughts and memories, they just come and go. Where do they go? Right? That's why I say they're not real. We may have given them lots of meaning and solidity, so they appear real. Like that movie, does that movie appear real to us? Yeah, that's why we have emotional responses. But, you know, if I said to you, Tina, are those real people? I mean, as you're talking about this movie and the drama, if I said, Tina, are those real people? You would say, no. Did they have real feelings? Well, yes. You know, but they're just actors and actresses. We know that, don't we? We know what's real and not real. But in our life, we don't. And we get in all kinds of trouble. Now, the big one is what? Future. It has a lot to do with anxiety. Is the future real in any permanent self-existing way? No. By definition, the future is what? Something that has not happened yet. Is that clear? See how simple this is. When we come out of our fog, right? Oh, the future hasn't happened. It's something that hasn't happened. Therefore, any thought that I have about the future is called what?
Fantasy.
Fantasy. Everybody know what a fantasy is? Well, it's something we might imagine, you know, it's kind of an imaginary thing, but it's not real. Why isn't it real? Because it just exists as a mental image or thought. Now, I've realized we've just probably taken away 90% of what we think about. Can you see, that may free up a lot of space in your mind for other things. Which may be a lot more pleasant than endlessly ruminating about the past and worrying about the future. No past, no future, which all of you have heard. You've all been around Zen, present moment. This is what it means. It's not just another nice concept. It's important. You know, I'm just going on and on, thinking about something that doesn't exist. I mean, I spent a year, you know, I mean, I spent a lifetime as a mental health professional. We have a psychiatrist over here, right? Doctor. People who believe in things that are not real, what do we call them?
Delusional.
Thank you. Which is interesting because that's what the Buddha called it. That we are delusional. We believe in things that are not real. We believe there is a past and a future. But yet when we stop, there are tons of things. That's why it's called ignorance. Yes, I was going to talk about intention, but I think we should...
You have a question.
Oh, yes. So you just proved it, Manfred. Thank you. Right? There was something that a moment ago seemed very important to say.
Yeah.
And now it's just disappeared.
It happens to me a lot.
another big word in Buddhism is called appearances. Anybody ever hear things are not as they appear? It's a very important word. Right?
So, everything is changing.
Mm-hmm.
Then how can we know what's true?
That is an excellent question. Please ponder.
And my answer is, I don't know.
That's a good start. Yeah, I think it's good to kind of deconstruct. our supposed knowing, and to come to the place of saying, I really don't know anything.
Yeah, that's where I am.
Good. Well, that can be a wonderful place. Do you remember being a child, Manfred?
Yes.
Like maybe, let's say, 6 months or a year or 18 months?
Yes.
Did you have a lot of angst?
Yes.
No, you didn't.
I can remember when I was somewhere around 12 months or maybe less, where I went potty in the front porch, and my mother said, "Ah, leave her. Messy, messy."
What I'm saying, I'm seeing that interesting.
Huh?
You see what you just did? I asked you about the context of a life, and you remembered an incident. That's interesting. That's why memory is such a dangerous thing. What I was asking, Manfred, is generally, being 1 year, being 6 months, being a year or two, did you have all the worries and the fears and the resentments you have now?
No.
No. Okay. You probably didn't have any of them.
You might. It all started.
Yeah, and then it just got worse and worse.
Before it started.
No. A few things, maybe. But again, because children don't have memory, they don't have cognitive ability. No, you had some good years back then. Even if your mother would say things like that you were a little messy. Right? And you did fine. And you were probably happier, basically, than you are as an adult with all your worries and concerns and past and future.
Yes, yes.
It's like that. So, if you are feel a little disoriented, like, what's your name again?
Carrie.
Carrie, a little disoriented, like, what? Does that mean there's nothing to hold on to and this whole thing's impermanent? And that's a little scary or disconcerting, or, right? That's good. Okay. I mean, this teaching is about pulling out the rug. We want the rug pulled out because it's not a good rug. So if there are things that were said today that confuse you or concern you or shake you up, or good, please use your time today to reflect, right, on these teachings. Are they true? Not whether I don't like them. I wish it wasn't that way. But is there a truth to them? That they are reflective of life the way it really is? Right? When we come out of denial, when we come out of the world of fabrication, and just see things very clearly, is this really the way things are? Impermanence, cause and effect, dukkha. Are these really the basic conditions of this world and my own life? And even though I know about past and future, do I actually spend most of my life very living in as if past and future are real things that I constantly have to deal with? Okay? This is big picture. So, when you're not, your mind is clear, reflect on these things. This is the practice of Buddhism. It's not just always to go around with an empty mind. It's really being mindful of these deeper aspects of life, what's really going on. Okay? So have a good day of practice.